The date was July 26, 1952. The place was Chicago. The event was the Democratic National Convention. The speaker was a man whose prominence, until then, had been mostly local.
I have not sought the honor you have done me. I could not seek it because I aspired to another office, which was the full measure of my ambition. And one does not treat the highest office within the gift of the people of Illinois as an alternative or as a consolation prize. I would not seek your nomination for the presidency because the burdens of that office stagger the imagination. Its potential for good or evil, now and in the years of our lives, smothers exaltation and converts vanity to prayer. I have asked the merciful Father, the Father of us all, to let this cup pass from me. But from such dread responsibility, one does not shrink in fear, in self-interest, or in false humility. So, if this cup may not pass from me, except I drink it, thy will be done.
This is Frank Blair for Monitor 65, on which NBC presents The Essence of Adlai Stevenson, a private man turned public. On Wednesday of this week, Adlai Ewing Stevenson died on a London street within sight of the American Embassy. It was a private death, without histrionics or melodrama, for Adlai Stevenson was a self-effacing private man. His popularity in the hectic, rocket-paced post-war years of the 20th century was somewhat strange, for he was, in effect, an anachronism, a man of thought in a time of action. Yet it was probably this very quality in his character that attracted people to him, for he represented not only thoughtful reflection, but a kind of respite, a kind of standing back, a kind of long look at things. As in these remarks he made during his first campaign for the presidency in 1952.
Long ago, we asserted a great principle upon this continent, that men are and of right ought to be free. Now we are called upon to defend that right against the mightiest forces of evil ever assembled under the sun. This is therefore a time to think. It is a time to feel. It is a time to pray. We shall need all of the resources of the stubborn mind, the stout heart, the soul refreshed in the task that confronts us. It is the most awesome task any people has ever faced, for we are become the leader and the mainstay of one of the great wings of humanity in conflict with another wing of humanity. As such, we must play the principal part in saving ourselves, our friends, and our civilization. Whose task is this? It is inescapably your task. You and you alone will decide the fate of your family and your country for decades to come. Yours is a democracy. Its government cannot be stronger or more tough-minded than its people. It cannot be more inflexibly committed to the task than they. It cannot be wiser than the people. As citizens of this democracy, you are the rulers and the ruled, the lawgivers and the law abiders, the beginning and the end. Democracy is a high privilege, but it is also a heavy responsibility whose shadow stalks, although you may never walk in the sun.
Adlai Stevenson, in that campaign, offered the world a respite not only from the conventional glibness of campaign oratory, but also from the ponderous rhetoric to which he had grown accustomed. He was a man who could provoke more than merely polite laughter, as he demonstrated during the 1952 campaign in a speech to the American Legion Convention.
I've attended too many conventions
not to know how you are all beginning to feel here on the afternoon of the third day. I know that you work hard at Legion business most of the day and then devote the balance of your time to the museums, the art galleries, the concerts, and the other cultural monuments of New York.
Patriotism was much discussed in the 1952 campaign, and Stevenson had a profound feeling for the subject.
What do we mean by patriotism in the context of our times? I venture to suggest that what we mean is a sense of national responsibility, which will enable America to remain master of her power, to walk with it in serenity and wisdom, with self-respect and with the respect of all mankind. A patriotism that puts country ahead of self, a patriotism which is not short, frenzied outbursts of emotion, but the tranquil and steady dedication of a lifetime.
Adlai Ewing Stevenson was born February 5, 1900. He attended public school in Bloomington, Illinois, and private school in Wallingford, Connecticut. He studied history at Princeton and law at Harvard and Northwestern. He served as a sailor in the First World War and later worked as a reporter on a family newspaper. He practiced law in Chicago and was special counsel for the Agricultural Adjustment Administration under President Roosevelt. In 1945, he helped plan the United Nations Organizing Conference. In 1948, he was elected governor of Illinois, and in 1952, he was chosen by the Democratic National Convention to be its presidential candidate in one of the few genuine drafts in American political history. That November, Adlai Stevenson lost the election.
I have sent the following telegram to General Eisenhower at the Commodore Hotel in New York. The people have made their choice, and I congratulate you. That you may be the servant and guardian of peace and make the dale of trouble a door of hope is my earnest prayer. Best wishes, Adlai E. Stevenson. Someone asked me as I came in down on the street how I felt. And I was reminded of a story that a fellow townsman of ours used to tell, Abraham Lincoln. And they asked him how he felt once after an unsuccessful election.
We want Adlai!
He said he felt like a little boy who had stubbed his toe in the dark. That he was too old to cry, but it hurt too much to laugh.
We will continue to examine the essence of Adlai Stevenson after we take a moment out. Adlai Stevenson's defeat in 1952 merely whetted the appetite of the Democratic Party for this thoughtful man from Illinois, and 4 years later he pursued his party's presidential nomination and won it a second time. He was persuaded to conduct a campaign with a staff of professional politicians, but his own convictions never changed.
If I were to attempt to put my political philosophy tonight into a single phrase, it would be this. Trust the people. Trust their good sense, their decency, their fortitude, their faith. Trust them with the facts. Trust them with the truth. Trust them with the great decisions. And fix as our guiding star the passion to create a society where people can fulfill their best selves. Where no American is held down by race or color, by worldly condition or by social status from gaining what his character earns him as an American citizen, as a human being, and as a child of God.
But once again, American voters rejected this man of thought, and he turned to the active practice of law. In 1960, after he was elected president, John Kennedy appointed Adlai Stevenson ambassador to the United Nations, for which his eloquence, his wit, and his comparative independence suited him extraordinarily. There were many moments in his career as UN ambassador which were worth remembering, but one of the most memorable was his exchange with the Soviet ambassador Zorin over the matter of Russian missiles in Cuba.
While we're asking questions, let me ask you why your government, your foreign minister, deliberately, cynically deceived us about the nuclear buildup in Cuba. And finally, the other day, Mr. Zorin, I remind you that you didn't deny the existence of these weapons. Instead, we heard that they had suddenly become defensive weapons. But today, again, if I heard you correctly, you now say they don't exist, or that we haven't proved they exist. With another fine flood of rhetorical scorn. All right, sir. Let me ask you one simple question. Do you, Ambassador Zorin, deny that the USSR has placed and is placing medium and intermediate range missiles and sites in Cuba? Yes or no? Don't wait for the translation. Yes or no?
I am not in an American courtroom, sir, and therefore I do not wish to answer a question that is put to me in the fashion in which prosecutor does. In due course, sir, you will have your reply.
You're in the court of world opinion right now, and you can answer yes or no. You have denied that they exist. I want to know if I've understood you correctly.
I should like to say,
sir, will you please continue your statement? You will have your answer in due course.
I'm prepared to wait for my answer until hell freezes over, if that's your decision.
Most often, as American ambassador to the United Nations, he spoke for a nation, but sometimes he spoke for an entire world.
Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt is dead, and a cherished friend of all mankind is gone. Yesterday, I said that I had lost more than a friend. I had lost an inspiration. For she would rather light candles than curse the darkness. And her glow had warmed the world. The issues we debate in this hall are many and grave. But I don't think that we are divided in our grief at the passing of this great and gallant human being who was called the First Lady of the World.
Last Wednesday, only hours before he died, Adlai Stevenson was interviewed by BBC. In that interview, he indicated the enormous pressure under which he had been working in recent months.
There has been a great deal of pressure on me in the United States from many sources to take a position, a public position inconsistent with that of my government. Actually, I don't agree with those protestants. My hope in Vietnam is that resistance there may establish the fact that changes in Asia are not to be precipitated by outside force. This was the point of the Korean War. This is the point of the conflict in Vietnam. I believe that Asia will be more stable in the future if the outcome is the same in both. That is to say, a negotiated line beyond which a great power will not attempt to enforce its interests on another, and a negotiated peace, a just and honorable peace, which leaves the future of the people of South Vietnam to be decided by them and not by force. This, after all, is what we spent from 1947 to 1952 doing in Western Europe. We drew a line. That line has been it has been respected by the Russians on the one side, by the West on the other. And we shall have to come to something like this in Asia.
Adlai Stevenson had the good attorney's virtue of being able to argue his country's case fiercely in UN debate. Nigeria's Mr. Esso Adibo tells of Stevenson's special contribution to the UN.
Well, I would put it this way. this world today is full of people who are fond of exhibitionism. In such a world, it was a most refreshing experience to come across a man like Adlai Stevenson, who so richly combined great and wonderful gifts with such great humility, and one who treated his fellow diplomats, whether they came from small or from big countries, as friends and colleagues, and one also who was so dedicated to the cause of humanity.
Mr. Amjad Ali of Pakistan recalled that Stevenson liked a particular poem composed originally in the Persian language.
Man tu shudi tu man shudam, man tan shudi tu jan shudam, ta kasna goyat badazi man digaram tu digari. I am you, you are me. I am the body, you are the soul. We've come so much closer together, no one can say which is you and which is me.
Deputy Ambassador Francis Plimpton was asked what Stevenson's death means to the American delegation.
Well, we close ranks and we march ahead. We will not have Governor Stevenson's eloquence. I hope we will inherit some of his reason. I am sure that we will carry on his faith, the faith that he did have in international organization, in the United Nations, in the possibility of international peace through international understanding. And certainly the United States mission will do its best to carry on and with the spirit and with the dedication and with the devotion that Governor Stevenson always showed.
Adlai Stevenson, the public man, did not reveal Adlai Stevenson, the private man, except on rare occasions. On one such occasion, during Christmas 1955, he sent Christmas cards to his friends on which was reprinted the following prayer of an unknown Confederate soldier. I asked God for strength that I might achieve. I was made weak that I might learn humbly to obey. I asked for health that I might do greater things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things. I got nothing that I asked for, but everything I had hoped for. Almost despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I am among all men most richly blessed. On Wednesday of this past week, Adlai Ewing Stevenson died on a London street. The following morning, on the NBC Today show, the actor Melvin Douglas, Mr. Stevenson's personal friend, offered this eulogy.
Yesterday afternoon, Adlai Stevenson died alone, within sight of a piece of land in a foreign capital that by protocol was United States soil, within sight of the American Embassy in London. He died alone, but in a very real sense, his death was shared by every citizen of the world. His position as the Ambassador of the United States to the United Nations placed him in the noisiest, busiest chamber of world opinion. But even there, at times, he was a lonely figure. President Johnson said in his speech, Adlai Stevenson was an American. And as an American, at times, he had to explain and defend American policies to the United Nations Assembly. He was the spokesman before the world for his country. That is sometimes a lonely, exposed position. Lonely. I wonder if I can explain the special magic Adlai Stevenson held for me and my colleagues. He expressed ideals that we believed in. He had a vision for this country and the world that was sorely needed. He communicated decency and dignity, alien to the sometimes seamy world of politics. He had a way with a phrase, a love for words, wit, charm, that communicated and moved people. There was an intrinsic drama and heartbreak to his political career, and the dignity with which he faced defeat was matched only by the sense of responsibility with which he faced his duty as an American. The death of any man diminishes all men. The death of Adlai Stevenson diminishes the world.
This is Monitor on the NBC Radio Network.